Are you an entrepreneur looking for more free time, more money, or just looking for that success blueprint? The Proven Entrepreneur is the podcast for you. Host Don Williams and his guests share real success stories from proven entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Don Williams.
Hey, Don Williams here with today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. I have my very good friend, super guy from Atlanta, Georgia, Ethan King. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Man, I am so thrilled that you came on and joined us today looking for your success story, you know, proven entrepreneur success stories. And as we know, as many times a success story has a failing piece, or in my case, many pieces that didn't work. But, you know, that's kind of the way it goes. So I want to take you all the way back to young Ethan. So 5 years old. So say from 5 to 18, I'm like all the way back.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. And in the household where you were raised, and, you know, some households are mom and dad, and some are mom and some are grandma, whatever that looked like. Okay. Was there an adult who was an entrepreneur, who set an entrepreneurial example for you as young Ethan?
No entrepreneurs in the family. None at all. My parents, very practical people. About 5 years old. So it was around then that my parents got divorced. My mom got remarried, but, you know, she's a doctor. My stepdad was a minister, and my biological father was a lawyer, and they wanted me to get a practical job and go that route. Well, young Ethan, I wanted to be an artist. That's my background. No business, no entrepreneurship. I literally wanted to be a fine artist, like drawing and painting and sculpture.
I love that.
Well, my parents very kindly told me that, Ethan, you know, artists don't make any money until after they're dead, right? But I was a stubborn kid, like most of us, and I didn't listen. So I actually ended up majoring in art anyway. I went to college and majored in art. I was very serious about it throughout high school. I went to a magnet school that specialized in visual art, had my work in exhibitions. I scored like a perfect 5 on both of the advanced placements. I was highly, highly focused on doing art as a career. But as it turns out, my parents were right. It's hard to make money as an artist. You have to do things like pay rent, and that gets to be a bit challenging. So to be honest with you, Don, for a time in my life, I was literally a starving artist.
And I love that.
Yeah. So in college, I did use my artistic talent when I joined a fraternity, and I was the guy that was designing all the t-shirts and the jackets and the flyers for the Greeks on campus, and other organizations started asking me to design their materials too. I would do it for free just because I loved doing it. But what I learned is that as an artist, a lot of times it's the reason the word starving artist exists is because many times we feel guilty about charging money for work that we love doing. So there's this like internal conflict with artists. I did learn how to get over that, of course, in order to be where I am today, but I'll explain that later in my story.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And I don't know, we haven't talked about this. So I just released my 4th book, and my 5th, I'm in midstream in book number 5, and probably I'm writing books till nice. I cannot write books. But my next book, I'm pretty sure the title is going to be Release Your Inner Artist.
Nice.
Because I know we're brothers of different mothers on this. And so I believe that you do your finest work. You may own a gas station, and that may be your art. Mm-hmm. Okay. But whatever you create at and whatever is in your zone of genius, that is your art.
That's right.
And there's more fulfillment, peace, contentment, and probably dollars if you practice your art, embrace it, run towards it instead of away from it. Okay, so I'm taking you back to young Ethan.
Okay.
Okay. So still schoolboy. Tell us about the first job, or maybe it wasn't a job. Maybe you had a lemonade stand, but what was the first effort you did where you earned money in some way?
The very first, wow.
The very first.
My first job, I was moving furniture around at Emory University. And that's when I realized that I wasn't cut out for manual labor. I needed to do something where I used my artistic skills and sat down. But probably my first entrepreneurial venture was when I was in computer club in high school. So we had a LAN network in the computer club, and I was big into gaming, and I had an after school arcade, and I charged kids money to come and play. There's this game called Doom. I don't know if you're into gaming, but it was like first person shooters. And so we would all be sitting in this arcade that I programmed all the computers to have a LAN party. I mean, that was my first entrepreneurial venture. That got shut down pretty quickly, though, because the game is pretty violent. I didn't think about that at the time because I was a kid, but that was fun.
You know, it's sometimes as a parent, and I know you're a parent. I'm a parent and a grandparent now. Congrats. But when the boys were here, you know, sometimes I would be confused about it. I thought parenting was to raise these perfectly well-behaved short people. And, you know, really probably the higher calling is to raise independent, caring, accomplishment-oriented adults. And kids just don't, you know, part of being a kid is, hey, I didn't think, you know, I just did it. And so that's kind of how that goes. So graduated from Emory, got your degree in art.
Well, I worked at Emory. I didn't go to
Emory. Oh, worked at Emory.
I went to UGA. Go Dogs. Won the championship.
Go Dogs. Yeah, they had a pretty good year this year.
Awesome year.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, so I have to include this part of my story. I want to be vulnerable and truthful here.
Please.
In college, I didn't make wise decisions. I was driven by the pursuit of money and found it hard to get. So I turned to hustling, and I actually ended up in jail twice by the age of 19. Even got suspended from college, from UGA for a semester, by the actual president of the university, Michael Adams. He called me to his office and actually suspended me because I was getting in so much trouble. I'm fortunate that he didn't expel me. So of course, my parents were disappointed in me. I was super embarrassed. My name was like all in the newspapers, in the school newspaper. So I graduated, but after college, I was dead broke because I had a bit of a criminal record and a degree in art. So it was tough for me to get jobs. This was my starving artist phase. And one of the most humiliating jobs I had was I cleaned the bar at this very dangerous strip club in the south part of Atlanta. And I took out the garbage. So it was a night job. It worked with my schedule because I was learning graphic design and digital multimedia during the day. But it was very humiliating, to say the least. But I felt stuck in that situation. And of course, growing up in a household with a minister, you can imagine there was a lot of guilt there. I couldn't tell the minister. I was working at a strip club, taking out the trash.
Yeah.
So
great story.
Well, that's not where it is. And I have to tell you this part of the story. I ended up doing graphic design work for some of the DJs at the strip club once they found out I had some artistic talent. But I couldn't use any of that work in my portfolio to land a real job because it was obviously very raunchy. So again, that made me kind of feel I was now earning some money in my field, but I still felt stuck in this world. And sometimes, you know, the universe gives you clues when you need to move on from something. And sometimes we're hard-headed and we don't listen to those clues. Then we're pushed out of that situation. So one night, literally on my way to the club, I was robbed. I was carjacked at gunpoint. And
wow. The
guy took all of my equipment. I ran. I didn't have any money. He was like, give me all your money. I just threw in my wallet and I ran, hopped over a fence. I could hear my car screeching away in the background. It was the scariest moment in my life. And I saw that as a sign from the universe to not use my talents for that lifestyle anymore and to put that behind me. And from that day forward, I made that decision. When I tell you, John, that less than maybe 30 days later, things just started to turn around in my life. I landed a full-time job as a graphic designer. I started booking some big-name clients in my first business, which was graphic design, Tyler Perry and McDonald's and some of the local radio stations. And around that time, I had a school project that I had started for the Greek paraphernalia industry. The business that I was doing is called Stuff for Greeks. And it started to get real orders from college students on the other side of the country. And they wanted me to design their jackets and their t-shirts and so forth. So now we were making real money. And my girlfriend and I at the time, she's my wife now, but we started this business together with $700. I put in $350. She put in $350. And we started Stuff for Greeks. And now we're still one of the top companies that makes custom personalized Greek paraphernalia for fraternity and sorority members all across the country. And our business kept growing and growing. And, you know, of course, you win the awards. And one of the awards that we won as we grew and we were opening store locations is the Bulldog 100. So this is the 100 fastest growing companies owned by UGA alumni. We've been fortunate to win this award four times in our company history. But Don, the first time that we won the award and we went to the awards banquet and I was called on stage, guess who presented me with the award?
I don't know. Who was it?
It was that same president, Michael Adams, who had kicked me out of college 10 years earlier. So I tell this story to illustrate that this was an inflection point in my life when I knew that I was finally on the right track. I was misaligned before, but now I felt like I was in alignment, and I saw that moment as certification. And I don't know if he remembered me, but I sure remembered him. And I even have the photo of him presenting me with the award 10 years later. So that was one of those full circle moments in my life and in my business journey.
I love that. And, you know, so many times, even not just startup entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurs, they view something that goes bad as this horrible, disastrous failure. And many times, if we just allow enough time to elapse, it was not fun. And I'm sure it was embarrassing. And it was some uncomfortable conversations with your folks about, you know, sitting out a semester at UGA. But so many times looking back, those challenges turn out to be, would you be on that same stage with the same president 10 years later winning the award if he hadn't kind of jerked your leash a little bit? Mm. And the odds are it's probably not.
Right. That's the paradox, right?
You know, probably not. And so I encourage all of our listeners, don't let your past define you.
That's right.
Maybe let it refine you. Okay. But don't let it define you. So, okay, I got to dig in. I didn't know this. I didn't know that you and your wife, girlfriend at the time, wife today, you had two children. Yes.
Yes. We have two kids, 7 and 11.
You have a busy, busy house. I didn't know that you two started the business together. And so you're partners in business, partners in life. And so I'm going to ask you, and I won't get you in trouble, or me in trouble. That's much more important that I don't get me in trouble. But give us a positive, okay, about sharing not only your personal family, spiritual, mental, emotional, but also your business life with one person.
Oh, yeah. You know, to be honest, people ask all the time, how do you guys work together and stay married? And I know this isn't a popular answer, but honestly, I feel like it strengthens our relationship. It strengthens our bond. I don't know if we'd still be married if we didn't have our business together. And here's how we make it work. So here's the positive part of it. And it goes all the way back to when we did premarital counseling. We were given an assignment. We had a list of day-to-day tasks. Let's say taking out the trash, washing the dishes, changing the kids' diapers, whatever, right? You have this long list. And then each person in the couple writes the name next to each item that they think is the person responsible for doing that thing, okay? And then you compare your answers and you see where there's alignment and where there's misalignment. So for example, if I wrote down taking out the trash, Ethan, and she wrote down taking out the trash, Ethan, great, we're on the same page. But if it's different, we have a discussion, right?
Yes.
So we do the same thing. And what that does is created, you know, you have your lanes. It sets expectations to where now I know for 20 years, I've been the one rolling the trash cans out to the side of the street because I know that I am the DRI. I stole this term from Steve Jobs. I am the directly responsible individual for rolling the trash cans out to the side of the street. Now, sometimes she'll do it if let's say I'm out of town, or we also have a young lady who helps manage the household that we hire and she'll roll out the trash can. So I can delegate it, but I'm the directly responsible individual. Okay. So that's the household thing, but we apply the same thing to our business. And she is very much she came from a background of corporate America. She was an insurance broker. So she handles all the HR, the payroll, the insurance. Me as a creative guy, that stuff drives me crazy. So she owns that. She's the DRI for that stuff. And of course, she delegates it out to her people. I'm more of the DRI for the creative and the marketing in our business, and I delegate that to our people. So we stay in our lanes. And of course, there's some overlap, and we serve as sounding boards for each other. And she also has her own business, her own podcast. She does her thing. I have my own ventures, but we are a support system for each other. And I truly believe the reason I say that this helps our marriage is I believe that if you take the metaphor of people in love gazing into each other's eyes, that will only last for so long. I think that the bond is stronger if you are side by side having a shared vision on the horizon, a shared vision of the future, and you two are fighting together, because there are going to be battles and adversities that you have to face and overcome together. And as you march toward that horizon together, your bond will go stronger and stronger. And that's what it's done for us.
I love that. I'm a firm believer that love is a verb. It's an action word. It's not a person, place, or thing.
That's right.
And if, you know, if you listen to music and watch television, movies, it's kind of portrayed as a noun, as a person, place, or thing. But true love is a verb. It's an action. And a couple nuggets. And so you're providing me answers to questions I haven't even asked you yet, because I always ask everybody for a golden nugget. You're just an overachiever, Ethan. But a couple nuggets in there that I loved were, one, and I learned this at an event where I went and listened to a sex therapist with a bunch of other people. And there was very little about sex as far as that goes. It was very, very tame. But the takeaway that everybody left with was this, that relationship, and in my opinion, all relationships, stand on the pillars of communication and expectation. Because we all have expectations, but if we don't communicate them to the person we're in that relationship with, we leave ourselves open to disappointment. For people that you care about, being at your mate, spouse, child, parent, partner, vendor, prospect, customer, probably best that you don't disappoint them any more than we have to as humans. So I love that. And then the directly responsible individual, very important. and I don't care if it's rolling the trash out or, you know, making the 401k deposit. That doesn't matter what it is. If it's important to you, probably somebody ought to be the DRI. Just saying. So, okay. And boy, you really have been ahead of me. I'm going to ask you for a hard lesson, and you've already given us a really great one at when you were UGA. Okay. But something that happened in your entrepreneurial career that at the moment was like, oh man, this hurts. Okay. But today, maybe in retrospect, turned out that it was, in fact, maybe the best thing that could have happened at the time. But at the moment when it happened, it was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if we're going to make it. We're going to limp for sure. And, you know, hopefully we can limp. Do you have a hard lesson you can share?
Oh man, do I. So a few years ago, we were in a business dispute that escalated into a lawsuit. And I have to be intentionally vague about it for legal reasons, but it was a loophole in an agreement that another brand we were doing business with and we had a relationship with decided to kind of turn the tables on us and go after our throats. And it was very, very scary. Our legal fees started adding up to over $300,000. And this was at a time when we weren't even, like, I think we had just graduated to EO. So we were just over a million and very, very thin margins. We did not have the money to fight this. We just had a new baby, a newborn at home, literally. And it was just a disastrous moment. And then not only did this brand go after us, but they also decided to expose this loophole and go after a lot of our competitors. And we saw some of our competitors go out of business, go bankrupt. So that got,
wow, Scary.
That got really scary. And that was the first time in my life and my business career that I actually entertained the word, even thought about it as a possibility. Should we file bankruptcy? So what we ended up doing was, well, first of all, we fired our lawyer because he was the one kind of suggesting, well, maybe you should just concede and go bankrupt. And I'm like, no. We're going to need somebody else on our team here. And that's when I learned, and I leaned on my EO forum, and people gave awesome experience shares and said, go with big letterhead. Get the biggest lawyer you can afford. Even if you can't afford the lawyer, you have to stretch yourself because lawyers are worth their weight in gold. I didn't know that at the time. I'm so glad I did it. We hired a shark that was in our corner, and he found a way to countersue the other party. And we ended up settling for a fraction of what they were looking for. And in that, this is kind of a funny side story. If you've ever gone through this type of thing before a lawsuit, it's really just, you're not sitting in a courtroom like you see on TV. It's a bunch of emails and letters going back and forth between lawyers. So there's a lot of waiting for the other party to respond. And there's really nothing else you can do during that time while you're waiting, you know, except, but it's on your mind. It's causing you to lose sleep and you're distracted. But you have to carry on the day-to-day work of the business. So I got so stressed out and burned out. I said, you know what? I'm going to train for my first marathon, right? How weird is that, right? But people were like, are you serious? For anyone who doesn't know, for the benefit of your listeners, a marathon is 26.2 miles. To train your body to run 26.2 miles, you have to run for hours every single day. So some days I was running 3 hours a day to train for this marathon. And this is in the middle of fighting for my life. For some reason, I'm going to tell you the logic behind this that was in my brain at the time. And I talk about this in my book, but I believe that there are six dimensions of life, kind of six areas. And I formed the acronym SIMPLE, spirituality, intellect, money. So anything dealing with your career, business is in the money category, your physicality, your love in relationships, and entertainment. So it forms the acronym SIMPLE. And life is going to throw some curveballs at you. Life is going to kick you and beat you up sometimes. And if you let it get you down in one area, you got to be careful not to let it suck you down in the other areas as well. So this lawsuit was affecting my money area, right? It was affecting my business, that my M level was way down. And I could feel it causing a strain on my relationships. I started to feel resentment. We had a new baby at home. I couldn't even enjoy my newborn son because I'm fighting this thing. And in my mind, I was angry. So it pulled on my relationships. It pulled down on my entertainment. Obviously, I wasn't traveling as much and doing things. It was pulling down on my spirituality. It was pulling down on my intellect. All I was reading about was legal related stuff. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take control over what I can control, and my body, I'm going to have a win. I felt like I was losing in all of these other areas. I needed a win. So me finishing that marathon was the mental win that I needed. And while it may seem unrelated on the surface, I feel like that's what drove me to fight harder for what I believed in and countersue the other party and prevail in the end. And we also made changes to our business that catapulted our success to where we are now. We have a different business model that we were forced to make during that situation. So while it was about 8 months of a very tumultuous time in our business, now I can look back on it and I'm thankful for it.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that story. And, you know, one thing I think entrepreneurs have a tendency, as a general statement, so you have to be careful with those, but they have a tendency to overlook taking care of them. Entrepreneurs are very good about taking care of other people. Take care of my team, take care of my spouse, take care of my kids, take care of my customers. Okay, what did you eat today? Oh, I didn't eat today. You know, or how long have you worked today? Well, I started at 5 a.m. and it's 8 p.m. And, you know, and just kind of crazy, not crazy, unusual behavior for the average person. And we all only have one body to get us from birth to death, and best that we don't abuse it any more than we have to, and we take care of it. And then plus all that gross physical activity, you know, your endorphins were certainly helping, you know, deal with everything else. And so that's awesome. Okay, what about a golden nugget? And you've already given us so many. I'm really grateful that you came on today. But something you know, some piece of wisdom in the mind of Ethan King that we want to know.
Well, it actually goes back to something you said earlier, Don. And you were talking about how traumatic moments can sometimes lead to success. Like you, if you wouldn't have made the changes that you needed to make, and whether that's in your business, your health, your relationships, oftentimes we wouldn't make certain changes until we're in a situation where we're scared in it, or it's painful to the point where we then are forced to make the change. And I've certainly went through a series of these traumatic moments. I've already mentioned the carjacking. I've mentioned the lawsuit. I also had a health scare. But when I looked at each one of them, it led to these inflection points in my life. But it doesn't always do that. We hear stories of people who didn't come out the other side. Either they ended up, you know, bankrupt, divorced, dead, whatever the worst situation is for their, you know, the worst outcome is for their situation, doesn't always have a happy ending. I heard a story about this gentleman named Paul Castle. He was a British real estate tycoon, a multimillionaire. And at age 54, this guy would seem like he had it all, private jets, Lamborghinis, Bentleys, every car. He even played polo with Prince Charles. You would think I had it all. At age 54, he stepped out in front of a subway train and took his own life. And you have to wonder, like, what when you peel back the layers, you're like, what happened? What was going on here? And we'll never know the whole story, but we did see that he was on his fourth marriage. He had some medical issues. He had been to the doctor a few times lately. He had some business deals that had went bad recently. And so it obviously just got to be too much for him. And he decided that that was the only way out. So I decided that I was going to catch myself early and not get that far out of balance. When I go back to those six areas, those six buckets, I call like the simple success buckets. So if there's a golden nugget that I want to share with people, it's that let your trauma catapult in your transformation to success. How can we use trauma as a launch pad for positive transformation? Better yet, how can you make that change that you know you need to make without having to go through the trauma? Like, where can you mentally trick yourself into making that change? And that's what I've been exploring. And I definitely have the answers. I wrote a book about it that's coming out next month. Maybe by the time this airs, it'll already be out. But it's called Wealth Beyond Money, Unlocking the Six Dimensions of Success for Richness in Every Area of Your Life. And I deeply explore the science of personal change in every aspect of life.
So look for that book. It'll be coming out soon. So I have a pastor friend that he relates that he thinks people change due to one of two stimuli. Either they see the light, so they prevent going through that trauma. They can see it out there. They're like, hey, I'm changing now. Or they feel the heat. And I think human nature is that most of us are more open to change. And change is hard. And big change is really hard. Okay. But I think most people are not the see the light kind of changers. They're the feel the heat kind of changers. But the part to remember is this: don't quit. There's a lot of overnight, but 20-year success stories that can tell you there was many nights of macaroni and cheese. Okay. And I just didn't quit. Maybe it would have been smarter to quit, but I just didn't quit. And so, you know, we got somewhere. And so that's great. Okay, so we're into the final turn here. We're coming to the finish line. I can see the checkered flag out there. Gonna put you into a time machine, okay, and transport you back. And you're gonna get a couple of minutes to share wisdom that you have today that you wish your 20-year-old self knew. So into the time machine, you go back 60, 90 seconds of, hey, Ethan, listen to this. This will help you It'll ease your way. It'll speed you on your path through life. And so what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
Oh, can I take one of my Greek paddles with me and just beat my younger self? Understanding.
Whatever you think.
Oh, no, I love that question. You know, what I would tell my younger self is that you create your own reality. Life is not happening to you. Life is happening for you. You are not a camera just soaking in what's going on around in your life. You're actually more like a projector. You create the universe that's around you, and the lens that you have on is how you're going to see and create the world. Once you realize that you're the creator of your destiny, that can change everything. With the right mindset and tools, you can reshape every aspect of your life. Like you can have it all. That's what I would tell my younger self. You can have it all, and it is much more simple than you think. If I had time with my younger self, I would give like actionable, pragmatic tips that he could implement. And that's really what inspired me to write the book, because my book is loaded with practical, science-backed tips that anyone can apply and that I wish my younger self would have applied sooner.
Yeah. The great thing about wisdom is that it's really good. And the bad side is you have to have some miles behind you to acquire any.
You have to have the wisdom to listen to the people who have the miles ahead of you and actually apply the lessons that they teach you, then that way you don't have to put on as many hard miles yourself.
That's true. Hey, a wise mentor or two will make a huge difference in whatever your endeavor is, for sure. Ethan, how would somebody reach out to you? You speak, you facilitate, you coach. How would somebody reach you?
The easiest way to reach me is just to go to my website, ethanking.com. It's just my first name, last name, ethanking.com. You can find links to reach me on every social media channel. You can shoot me a message. You can book me to speak at your event. You can buy my book. You can do all of that at my hub, ethanking.com.
Hey, folks, that's today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show with rock star Ethan King. Thanks. See you next time.
Thanks, Don.
That's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur. Go to provenentrepreneurshow.com, subscribe to the show, leave an iTunes review, and you could win a $25,000 VIP day in Dallas with Don himself. And get Don's easier and faster selling with video course free. Please join Don on the next episode of The Proven Entrepreneur.